The humanitarian situation in El Fasher and in localities surrounding North Darfur's capital is catastrophic. During the last weeks, there's been a significant deterioration in the security situation, including increasing arbitrary killings and thefts of livestock, systematic burning of entire villages in rural areas, escalating air bombardments of parts of the city, and a tightening siege around El Fasher, which has halted humanitarian aid convoys and choked off commercial trade. As a result, prices of increasingly scarce commodities like food, water, and fuel have soared, putting large numbers of people at risk of hunger and disease. And this is happening on the back of recent reports from NGOs like Doctors Without Borders, Solidarité Internationale, and Relief International, which have described escalating hunger and medical emergencies in pockets throughout the state, including in El Fasher's Zamzam camp. Some areas around El Fasher and elsewhere in Darfur now stand on the brink of famine. The UN and partners recognize that we must do everything possible to scale up our activities in the state. We are committed to reestablishing a strong humanitarian presence in El Fasher to best respond to the situation according to the resources we have available and to facilitate the delivery and distribution of humanitarian aid to vulnerable populations and including IDPs across the state, wherever they reside and regardless of which armed force controls the area. However, in order to respond, we need a calm and conducive environment, and this simply does not exist at the current time.
And what is the significance of El Fasher?
El Fasher, or it is, as it is otherwise known, El Fasher Sultan, is the capital of Greater Darfur. It is the only city in Darfur that remains in the hands of the Sudanese armed forces and has a population of around 1.5 million people. This includes about 800,000 IDPs who fled to the city from across the five Darfur states during the earlier 2003 to 2005 Darfur War and during the latest war that started in April 2023. If the warring parties choose to fight for control of the city, it will have devastating repercussions on the resident civilians. Large numbers of civilians are going to lose their lives. Because of the background, the history, and the nature of El Fasher, civilians who live in the city come from across all Darfur communities. They come from the Fur, Zagawa, Dadinga, Birti, Birgid, Tunjur, Medob, Takarir, from Arab tribes Zayidia, Marghaba, Hawara, Jawama, Asirra, Auladrif, Rzegat. All of these communities are respected members of El Fasher society. There would be victims from every Darfur community, Arab and African, if the warring parties battle for control of the city. Massive bloodshed of innocent civilians in El Fasher would lead to revenge attacks across the five Darfur states and beyond Darfur's borders. I'm afraid that the world would witness history repeating itself. 21 years after conflict ripped apart Darfur's fragile social tissue and collapsed its mosaic of communities. We should not allow this to happen again.
Does the UN have any presence in Darfur right now?
UN and NGO international staff were evacuated from Darfur after the war broke out in April last year. Many brave local Sudanese staff continued implementing programs in Darfur under very difficult circumstances. Several NGOs have re-established offices inside Darfur and expanded their programming according to funding. The UN has been delivering humanitarian assistance to vulnerable populations since August. However, our activities have been restricted by intensive military clashes in central parts of the country and by limitations imposed on our cross-border movements from Chad. Recently, I visited El Fasher to discuss the humanitarian situation with all parties, to set up a reinforced UN presence in the city and to resolve blockages along two critical aid corridors from Port Sudan in the east and from Tina on the border with Chad, and to prepare for a comprehensive needs assessment mission. All parties welcomed the mission. Blockages along aid routes were resolved, and trucks loaded with humanitarian aid were able to deliver their supplies. I was greatly encouraged by the willingness of the parties to facilitate humanitarian access with the support of the United Nations as a neutral facilitator. Regrettably, Broader tensions between the parties escalated during the Eid al-Fitr period, which forced the UN and some other humanitarian partners to leave the city. However, I'm confident that when the security situation stabilizes, the UN and humanitarian partners will be able to resume our work facilitating humanitarian access as quickly as possible. All parties must recommit themselves to the Jeddah Declaration, international humanitarian law, and allowing humanitarian access to access all areas with vulnerable people in need of humanitarian assistance.
There are several reports of people in Darfur dying from hunger. Does the UN have any current plans to provide aid to those affected?
The UN is committed to providing food, nutrition, medicine, and other humanitarian assistance to vulnerable populations across the five Darfur states. However, we have two existential challenges. We cannot provide the volume and the scale required unless we have more financial resources to buy and pre-position the aid. And we cannot reach the vulnerable populations who need the aid unless we have access provided by the warring parties. We hope that the pledges made at the recent Paris Donors Conference will help resolve our first challenge. As for the second challenge, for access, we are constantly advocating with the warring parties and with those countries who have influence on them to give us the humanitarian access that we need to respond and to alleviate the effects of an expected oncoming famine.
The UN has been repeatedly calling for de-escalation and the protection of civilians in Sudan, but it seems the parties are not yet ready for this. In your opinion, why is that?
The UN has been calling for de-escalation and protection of civilians since the outbreak of the war more than 1 year ago. However, these calls fall on deaf ears. The warring parties are more preoccupied in gaining military advantage on the ground than they are in finding ways to halt the fighting. Unfortunately, soldiers, fighters, militiamen, bandits fighting on the ground are not thinking about international humanitarian law and notions like protection of civilians. A second reason why the parties are not listening to appeals for de-escalation is that the conflict has become increasingly internationalized and other countries are becoming engaged and supporting one side or the other. This results in the conflict becoming much, much more complicated. A war with multiple international actors becomes harder to mediate and resolve, and it's essential that mediators gather the warring parties and their backers together around the negotiating table and bring the war to an end. After more than a year of senseless war, the suffering of innocent civilians has got to stop.